Grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, February 27, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak.
Geeking it with the geeks. Geek fried. Geeking it with the geeks. Geek fried. Geek fried. Geeking it with the geeks. Geek fried. Geeking it with the geeks, geek fried. Geek fried. Geeking it with the geeks, with the geeks, geek fried. Geek fried. We got it. Geek speak. Early in the morning. Let's blend some geeks this morning.
Welcome to Geek Speak. Bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity, my name is Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we have digital band Deep Fried talk about the way they use geeky stuff to make music.
Good morning. So what we got cooking this morning is some homemade software using Max MSP, where we've got some samplers, some looping, some drums that we've recorded ahead of time. Rob's playing the bass live, and take some sound inputs, mix them together, blend them with what I call the Cuisinart. And this morning what we're going to present is Geek Fried, that is Deep Fried Geeks, or what have you.
Well, let me do a little bit of intro on the show, and we'll let you come back. Today, during the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then send a message. I'll be giving out that contact information again when I invite you to participate in about a half an hour. The geeks this morning are John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, programmer and student of American literature. My name's Lyle Troxel. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning.
So before we get into the entire Deep Fried experience, before we continue the Deep Fried experience, we're going to do a little bit of geek news as we do every day on Geek Speak. We'll start with John.
Morning. Morning. I've got a little music news. As everybody knows, Tuesday, the 24th...
Well, not everyone, or else we wouldn't be here.
Oh, all right. As most everybody knows, Tuesday the 24th was Gray Tuesday. Happy Gray Tuesday, belatedly.
Now, what's Gray Tuesday?
Gray Tuesday was a day when DJ and music producer Danger Mouse... well, this is not when he did it. Okay, there's a DJ. His name's Danger Mouse. He mixed the Beatles' White albums. He took the lyrics from that, and he took the beats from Jay-Z's Black album, mixed them together. So he had the lyrics from the Beatles, the beats from Jay-Z, put them together and called it the Gray album, because it's the White album, Black album, Gray album. Makes sense. So he released this online, and it turned into a runaway hit, which made EMI, who's a music company that holds the copyrights for the Beatles lyrics, Beatles songs, they said, no, that's bad. You're stealing our music. You can't do that. So in response to that, Danger Mouse had a day when he would release all his music, Gray Tuesday. And to support him, over 400 websites and blogs kind of told the story on their sites or offered his music for free download.
So it spread rapidly.
That day, over 100,000 people downloaded the Gray album, making it, for that day only, the number one selling album in the world.
Cool.
Yeah.
So...
or most listened
what's
to,
the,
anyway.
What's the status right now of... I mean, basically, his material is out there in the public domain almost because it's so widely spread.
Right.
So if a lawsuit comes about to attack him, are they going to claim that there's damages involved of him actually creating this music, even though he's not selling it?
I have no idea what EMI is going to do at this point. They did send him a desist letter before Gray Tuesday saying, you cannot release this, and then he did. So I don't know. Legally, are they going to come back and sue him? I don't know. It's
probably
an interesting one to watch.
Definitely.
Though.
Under normal circumstances, if he let loose a tape and pass it out to a whole bunch of folks, then it wouldn't be an issue. But because it was transmitted over the internet, you're falling in, falling under the sway of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Ah, so it's that's one of the
as soon as
problems.
You put it into ones and zeros, suddenly it becomes more of an issue.
Right. Gosh. Okay, bad laws. All right. Thank you very much, John. Miles?
Broadband over power lines. Earthlink in North Carolina has been working with Progress Energy to set up 500 homes in a pilot project to have internet access over power lines. This was supposed to give data rates exceeding 10 megabits a second.
Over the power lines. Okay, cool.
Yes, and it has promotional pricing of $20 a month. After 3 months, it's 50, but there's no word yet on public outcry about it. Apparently, a lot of ham radio operators and FEMA, the emergency Federal Emergency Management Agency, I think it's the
FEMA. Okay,
are somewhat upset about broadband because it has some leakage, signal leakage.
Okay,
so it ends up mucking with the signals for several radio, several amateur radio bands, shortwave radio, older cordless phones.
Now, a while ago, Miles, when you started talking to me about the idea of power distributed high speed connections, at first you were like, it sounds so cool because then a utility like a power company could start providing internet access.
Well,
but then you said, the information you said was, you know, you've been listening about ham radio operators being really upset about it, and it kind of, you changed your theme a little bit. So why?
Well, it's like anything. You hear about something that sounds really great, and then it happens to have some unintended side effects, some unintended consequences. And yeah, it's a tough issue. For rural areas, that it's basically the only way they can have high-speed broadband access.
Right.
At the same time, when there's a power outage or the, like,
or
ham radio operators, and, like, this is how people communicate. Now, people would say, well, if the power's out, then you don't have a problem with ham radio. But at the same time, unless ham radio operators can practice and do it in their normal times, in a non-emergency situation, you're not going to have the same effectiveness when the power goes out.
Right. Thank you, Miles. John?
I've got the Mars update going. We've got two explorers on Mars, as everybody knows.
Two small robots.
Two small robots, Spirit and Opportunity. Spirit's doing great. It's fully recovered, cruising around, looking at rocks, taking X-ray samples of dust particles. There's supposed to be a couple dust devils going on today. Cool stuff. The Opportunity rover has been having some problems. We reported a couple weeks ago it's got a heater that's coming on for no apparent reason, and it's draining the batteries. They say if this continues, it's only going to have like a 30 to 60-day lifespan instead of projected 90 to 120-day. So early March, they're going to be uploading new software to it in the hope that that corrects the problem. In the meantime, they're going to, in the morning, they're doing a receive-only communications, which means they're not going to get as many images from it as they had hoped. And they're also having it take naps during the day. They're shutting it down during the day so it can recharge, and then bringing it up to do some work, and then shutting it down again. So they're trying to keep the batteries as full as possible.
All right. Well, thanks for the update on Mars. Miles?
Some folks have set up a personal computer as a set of five pens.
What do you mean?
I wish we could show the picture. This is
right,
so cool.
I have a picture in front of me. Unfortunately, that doesn't translate well over the air. But you basically have one pen that's actually a projector, and it'll project onto a wall in front of you. You have another that projects the image of a keyboard onto the desktop and will detect where your fingers press on the desktop as though it were a standard keyboard. You have another that's one that acts as a CPU, as your processor, and then another that acts as your storage unit.
Wow.
And a final one that acts as a camera, phone.
Who's producing this?
This is a company. Let's see. This is NEC.
Oh, so it's a real company offering it. And is it available soon or in the future kind of thing?
This is a prototype,
kind of cool.
When you see car shows and they have the prototype cars of the future.
Sure. Well, now, when we have Chris Dunphy on, he's the kind of portable expert. I'd love to hear his take on it. I'm sure he's seen the device. But one thing he mentioned about projected keyboards that go onto the desktop is that your hand placement has to be pretty right on. And it's really hard to tell when you actually hit a key. You really got to do it like exaggerated a little bit. Of course, that will probably get a little bit better as
As kids learn this, they're going to go, what? It's not a big problem.
Right,
all you
old
timers just need to get in step here.
Miles, thanks for that. John?
In the realm of not quite here yet, got a new bacteria out called Geobacter. Don't worry, this is a good one. What Geovactor does is it eats rust and creates electricity. If you're interested in it, you can go up to www.geobacter.org. I won't go into all the details now, but one of the things they're hoping they can do with one of the, they call them microbial variants. Basically, they take the microbe and they tweak it. One of the things they can do is make a fuel cell that can take organic matter, break it down, and create electricity from it. It sounds too good to be true. It's kind of like the Mr. Fusion from Back to the Future.
Right, sounds pretty cool.
I saw a picture of it running.
What was it powering?
It was powering a pocket calculator, and it had this gigantic fuel cell powering this little dinky pocket calculator. So okay. It's not quite there yet, but it is kind of exciting because it can also take nuclear waste and transfer it into energy as well. So, yeah, maybe it's a way to help clean up things.
Right, right. Okay. Miles?
In spam news.
Yes.
A company known as Sophos has found that the U.S. is the world leader in spam.
Well, I'm not surprised with that.
Yeah, all the times that people say, like, oh, I'm upset about the spam coming over from Russia or from China or Taiwan. As it turns out, the U.S. is still about 60% of the world's spam.
60%?
Yeah.
It's interesting because the whole remark on that we're controlling spam through legislation is that, well, yeah, we're controlling spam in the U.S. through legislation, but that won't control people outside. But if 60% is coming from the U.S., it could have a pretty big
impact.
There
is a case also that people, if the U.S. were to crack down on it, that they would move outside the U.S. borders.
So right.
Going to the Canary Islands, for example, or to the Cayman Islands. On the bright side, there are two spam filters that have been tested, CRM-114 and DSpam, which are spam filters that are 10 times more accurate than human beings are. In other words, when we go through our mailbox and start saying, this is spam, this is not, and just do it because you have, you know, 1,000 spams and you're just trying to get through all of them.
Sure, of course.
They're actually more accurate than a human being will be.
All right.
In other words, 99.84%.
So spam fighting is getting better. Basically, is what we're talking about.
Well, if legislation isn't working, technology may foot the bill.
Good. John, your last news item for the day?
My last news item for the day is, which one to choose? I'm going to choose the GM fuel cells. GM's been working on fuel cells for a while. They want to make a platform for a vehicle that they can drive around running on hydrogen fuel, stored in a fuel cell. What they've done is they've taken a Dow Chemical plant in Texas. Dow Chemicals makes, you know, a lot of noxious chemicals, and they installed 400 fuel cells that can produce 35 megawatts of power. The reason they did it at this Dow Chemical plant is one of the major byproducts at this plant is hydrogen, which is what the fuel cells need to run. So they have this overabundance of hydrogen. So they're taking that hydrogen and they're pouring it back into their system via these fuel cells. It'll produce about 2% of the power needed at this plant, which is actually enough to power about 25,000 homes. And they're hoping that in doing this, they can learn enough and bring the technology down to a inexpensive enough price where they can start to put it in cars. Because right now they're saying fuel cell vehicles are way too expensive with the current technology. So they're hoping this will help advance the technology, bring the price down.
Here's something that's better than the EV.
Yeah, definitely.
No kidding.
Thank you, geeks, for your wonderful news. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are John Tracy and Miles Elam. Our musical support today is half of a group called Deep Fried. Peter Chester and Robert Cross are here with us this morning. Peter and Robert, welcome to Geek Speak.
Howdy, howdy.
Take it away, guys. So, Peter, I do want to talk to you a little bit about how you're making music right now. You've got a G5 in here.
Yes.
And behind you, you have Robert, and he's on a bass, and he's doing live. So what's the process as you play?
So what we got going on is, like I said before, you're using Cycling 74's Max MSP, which is a highly recommendable experimental electronic music system. It was designed originally for MIDI musicians, so that because, you know, in the 80s or so, MIDI was, you know, you get your tools and stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of things you couldn't do. So what this allowed people to do was to program your own MIDI patches and your own ways of sending MIDI signals around. And then they added some audio function to it. Now they've just added some video function to it, so you can make your own video software. Amazing, amazing.
Now,
I haven't touched that yet.
Have you made your own software with Max DSP?
Yeah, so what I've done is I made what I call a Cuisinart, which has got 8 buffers. That means 8 places to record audio, and plays back 4 of them at a time, and it's got 7 drum buffers, so I've got like a whole list of drums that I've recorded, that I've made, whatever. and that we play back in synchronization with the recorded loops.
I'm by the way, I'm very impressed, and I think everybody else is, that you're able to talk to us while you're mixing. I mean, you're kind of, you're definitely splitting yourself, even with headphones. You've got kind of two things going on.
Different headphone on each ear. Must be quite a sight. Four different earpieces on one head.
On one head. So, basically, one thing we want to mention right off the bat is that tomorrow you've got a CD release celebration, your first CD, tomorrow, February 28th, 8 p.m., at Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright Avenue, corner of Broadway. It's at 8 p.m. tomorrow, and you'll be performing live, and you'll be doing, the entire group will be here.
There's more members that aren't here. Yeah, it's a much more full sound, lots of, you know, we've got guitarist Bob Von Eld, is ripping it up. He plays with Soul Circle all the time, and we've got Lindsay Chester, she's pretty well known around the community in theater respects. She's got a remarkable voice.
Any relation?
Well, in between Peter Chester and Lindsay Chester, you know, we see each other once in a while. but I'd love to mention about this album. It's called Incense. And what it is a collective of the recordings we've done over the last year, which are all live. So it's all like this kind of thing where we sit down and just play something, or we've practiced something, then we play it.
And probably not as much talking over
it. And not a lot of talking over it. And they're all consolidated, because we could play like a half-hour mix, you know, and like get lost in it. And what we'll do then on our album is take it all and consolidate it into a tight, you know, 10-minute song or something.
Well, why don't you go ahead and get lost now, and enjoy.
Get lost. and just one other little thing is that what we did is we went back, this kind of interesting little tidbit about it, is we went back and we labeled all the songs based on the way they made us feel by going and buying some incense downtown, a bunch of incense, smelling the incense and listening to the music and coordinating a name for the songs and the smells of incense.
Yeah, and does that have a special name, that naming concept?
Synesthesia.
I like it.
Synesthesia, isn't that where you see see like or colors
you
as
can see
music
sounds,
as colors,
colors
or
it's a mixing of senses.
Yeah.
The hard thing about doing this live on the show is that all the best samples pass me by and I just can't quite capture them. Synesthesia, isn't that when you mix your?
That was a perfect sample.
Perfect sample. Anyway, so I've got a little geek speak mix here. We can drop on you. Okay, here we go. Tell that every time we make something, it's totally different than the last time. I mean, 100% different. Anyway, so I imagine you guys want to talk some geeky stuff too, huh? Like,
about
G5s or
I wish folks, could see this because I'm staring at a, what is that, a 19 inch?
Oh yeah, it's flat screen.
I'm having a hard time describing it.
I wish I could see it too, Miles.
It's a bunch of graphs. What looks to me like a bunch of graphs. You have a bunch of waveforms on the right that have peak decibel levels, and he's basically having a sliding scale on that.
We'll get some images up a little bit later today on GeekSpeak.org just to see what you're doing.
There's a screenshot on our site of this software. Our site is deepfried.info, and it's not .com, it's .info.
Okay, so deepfried.info.
That's right.
All right, so you can get more information on deepinfo.fried.
Yeah. If they had a .fried, I'd get it.
Of course. So let's talk a little bit about the gear that you're using. You've got a G5 to your left down on the floor there. It's running, of course, a normal computer, G5, Macintosh G5, dual processor, I'm assuming, machine.
Yeah.
And you've got... a microphone going into it. You also, of course, have Robert's bass going through that.
Now, how we manage that is using a Motu 828 audio card. It's not really a card. What do you call that? It's Yeah.
Robert wants to come in the conversation. Is that what we want to do? You want to try to move forward to a microphone?
You know what I should do? Here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to record his bass line so that he can stop playing the bass.
And go get a drink?
Okay. Yeah, you know, we do that sometimes. We'll be playing and he'll be like, hey, Peter, record my bass line so I can go get a beer. And, you know, like, so you step off stage for a minute and get a beer.
How do you record it and sample it so it's the right length to keep a measure going?
He's playing in sync, right?
Right,
okay, Rob, you almost ready? 3, 2, 1.
So now we're recorded? Yeah, and he stopped playing.
Did you even hear the transition?
I didn't hear it. How did you sync that so well?
Well, he's just playing it in sync, and I'm just recording it. And what happened is I wrote this code to break all the recordings into units of bars and beats.
So you have a beat that... So there's some beat going on that you guys all sync to, which happens to be that break point.
Right.
And all you have to do is repeat that segment, and it's Robert repeating. Yeah, go ahead and pull the mic close to yourself, please.
So, yeah, and then I could, like, say 16 beats, and so he's playing 16 beats right now. I guess we can count that. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, like that kind of beat.
Okay, so that's coming from the G5. It's recorded and it's looped. And Robert's not playing anymore. He's just sitting with it. So, Robert, hi.
Hi.
So, we wanted to get Robert in the conversation because we had to ask him something about the mixing of the car that's in the G5. What are we talking about there? What is the audio input, if you will?
By the way, I should say about Rob real quick. He's one of Santa Cruz's up and coming foremost audio engineers working at Seabright.
Seacliff
Productions. And hello, hi. And he's a good guy to ask stuff about audio in general.
So
audio guru.
Audio guru. Okay, so audio guru Robert. What's going on with the G5? What's in the G5 that allows you to take a mix from your bass and also mixing? I'm assuming from this microphone that's sitting on the desk.
So we're going through the 828, which is a 24-bit audio converter, and that accepts quarter-inch cables like my bass and also XLRs, which are the
microphone
bass, SM58s we use for recording. And
now, is that unit external to the G5, or is it?
Yeah, that is. So
is that big box I'm kicking over here?
Yeah, that is the one you keep bumping into.
That looks much more like a traditional piece of band equipment. It looks like an amplifier. It's in a case for touring.
Yeah.
But it's got a FireWire output.
Oh, it does. Okay, I was wondering how does it do this. So there's the geeky side. So it's got 1394 output, which is a pretty good baud rate. Can you mix the different levels that are coming in?
Yeah, well, that's what he's doing live, which is what he's doing on the computer, and then all that is going into the audio card, into the G5, and then it's coming back into the audio card, and that's what you're hearing. So it's all coming in and out the 828.
So why in and out? Why go in from it and back out? I mean, I don't understand that.
Because it's the good conversion quality that is why you got the nice outboard audio card.
Okay.
Because a lot of audio cards that come with your computer... the rate at which they can record and play back is really low and not what you want to use for something like this, and especially if you're going to be doing stuff where it requires a lot of action happening on your computer, because your computer's not going to like it and you're going to freeze up. So it's really good to have as much outboard gear as you can get.
All right, so you're doing a much more traditional thing. You're not making the G5 the major source of the sound, really. You've got another piece of unit, which is nice because it acts much more like an instrument, even though it's incorporating other instruments into
it. Yeah, exactly.
There's a very practical reason, too, why we got the A28 specifically is because this started on a G4 laptop, which has no audio in at all.
The earlier ones, right?
Yeah, and there were some... USB audio converters on the market at the time, but USB audio converters are notoriously poor quality and crash and everything, and this was the only FireWire audio, what do you call it again? A processor?
Well, it's basically an audio card is what
it is. An audio card.
It's just a very nice
external audio card. It's the only one that was FireWire at the time, so... now there's a bunch of them, but basically, if you come to making a decision on doing USB audio versus FireWire audio, don't do USB audio. It's okay. Not the way to go.
No, I can second that. We do a lot of dubbing and stuff for iMovie stuff that we do at home.
This is John Tracy speaking.
Yeah, and we've got a USB, and it's a microphone line in that hooks up to USB, and they're both supposedly audio USB.
Right.
And you can still totally tell the difference in quality
right.
between audio and just regular line in.
Let's talk a little bit more about, Robert, you're being an audio expert. What do you do for a profession? Your other profession.
Yeah. I'm an engineer at a studio in Scotts Valley.
And what does that mean exactly?
And so bands will come in, and it's my job to...
make them sound good.
Yeah, hook everything up and make sure everything sounds good so they get a good recording and they get good songs they're stoked on. Because the main job is to make people feel comfortable and to make sure nothing is messed up as far as the sound goes. But you want people to feel good in the studio is my main job, really, what it comes down to. Because the getting things plugged in, it's not that hard, you know. You can teach anyone to plug stuff in. But as an engineer, it's important that you get people to be happy with what's happening.
And do you get that through knowledge, or is it just more like an intuitive feel? Is it just your knowledge of the equipment that allows you to set it up and make people feel comfortable, or is it something more than that?
It's definitely more than that. It's about how you talk to people in the world and how you understand how a person plays their instrument or how that person is trying to express themselves. You need to help them do that as best as possible.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments about the music you're hearing or how it's made, the numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. This is Central Coast Public Radio KSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam and John Tracy. And we also have half of Deep Fried playing, of course. This program is supported by a grant from CruiseIO, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. If you have questions or comments regarding music, digital music, or if you'd like to just ask us some computer help questions, we're here to take your calls. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Visit the internet. Using the internet, visit geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message.
So what's more is some of these drum loops have been created by a local drummer, Steve Robertson. He's a percussionist. He'll be playing at our show tomorrow at the Pacific Cultural Center at 8 o'clock. And, I thought I'd feature another little feature on here. A feature. I put together a little drum machine component. Let's see if I can isolate it. You hear that drum? Now that drum loop is being mixed. What I did is I chopped it into 8 parts and then put a little sequencer that cuts it and puts the parts in different places. So let's say you take the timeline of one drum loop and chop it into 8 pieces. Mm-hmm. Then you take the first piece and you put it in the 7th part of the audio file, and you take the last piece and you put it in the middle, and so what you'll hear is this drum loop, hopefully, if it's working right. Let's see, is it working right? That'd be cute if it wasn't working. Well, it appears to not actually be working.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to a call, because we do have Arch from Aptos. Arch, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how you doing?
Quite well. What's your question today on GeekSpeak?
Well, it's really interesting that your guests are on today, because I've been trying to make some decisions about some interfaces to the computer, audio recording interfaces to the computer, and I've been mulling over this USB versus FireWire issue. And I'm wondering if the reason that you guys choose, you know, you came out pretty strongly for FireWire is because of the sample rates that you can get through, or what?
Well, it's this sample rates. I mean, basically, you know, I don't know too much about USB 2,
mm-hmm.
but compared to USB, it's much faster, and we can get multiple lines going in and out. We've got 8 lines in and out, and actually we could get a lot more than that because the Motu can be daisy chained, so you can get a whole bunch of them together.
So which Motu do you guys use?
What's that?
Which unit are you using?
The Motu 828.
828.
What company is that that makes this?
Magic of the Unicorn.
Eye of the Unicorn.
Motu.
Yes, Eye of the Unicorn.
Is
it? Eye of the Unicorn? Magic of the Unicorn.
I thought it was Mark of the Unicorn.
Mark. Well, we know what we're talking about here.
That's why we have the phones open, so we don't sound like complete idiots.
Well, anyway, so you guys are running at FireWire to the G5, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, how much? What is the transfer rate you can get on the FireWire? I guess is one question.
The transfer rate.
Miles, do you have a transfer rate?
FireWire is 400, yeah.
400 megabits?
400 megabits, but if you're talking sample rate?
Well, you guys are doing 24-bit, 96 kilohertz sampling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm just trying to figure out technically why, if you're only running a few channels, for instance, the USB would be, for say, home recording or something, why the USB would be insufficient.
I think we're kind of in a mix. We're in two different things. Prior to them getting this mode box, they were using USB devices, but they weren't the same type of devices. They were DSP boxes, and they were a little cheaper. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were one in, one out.
Right.
Rob and I met at the UCSC Electronic Music Studios.
Peter Elsie Studios.
And, I posed this question to Peter Elsie before.
Who's a professor of music.
He's a professor of electronic music.
Okay.
Before I did anything, and he told me long stories about USB modules, every one that he tried not working.
Right,
and
right.
So I decided, okay, that's enough for me.
So it's not necessarily the technical spec that USB 2 is actually faster than the base FireWire. That's true. But it's that everybody's had bad experiences with USB audio devices. So now
I just wonder how much those past experiences are coloring, against current products.
Probably a lot.
It could be that current products are fine, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, this knowledge is just over a year old.
Right.
So,
I mean,
a lot or not a lot could happen in a year.
Absolutely. Well, hey, that's great information. I don't want to keep from hearing you guys jamming. So
No, it's good that you point out how our experience could be coloring our. What did you say? That was great.
You want a sample of it, don't you? Arch, thank you for
our food.
Arch, thank you very much, and I will take that as a request. So here's Deep Fried some more. Kind of jumped on you guys on that one. Sorry about that.
Right, so another thing that's kind of fun to do sometimes is to take some, like, crazy samples. Like, I have here with me a bugle, which I do not know how to play. And so what I do is you know, like, I'll take, open up a buffer here and see if I can sample a little shot of bugle here now. You know, watch your ears. All right, you ready? It sounds pretty bad, right?
You weren't exaggerating on the nothing.
Away from the instrument.
Now, watch this. I will make this horrible sounding bugle sound good. This is how we started. We're like, okay, how can we make really bad sounds sound good? Wait, that's not what I was talking about.
You're failing.
Wait.
The sounds of flatulence.
Hey, this is art. This is art in progress here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm under the pressure. Oh, boy.
Maybe you could pass it.
Oh, you know what it is? It's because I forgot the verb. There we go.
Choice of electronic music.
My 7-year-old must be loving this.
Do you want to take another sample?
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea.
Pass that bugle to me.
How about this bell?
No, I'm a sax player, so no, I can't do that.
Yeah, but that bugle has a trombone mouth bit on it, so it's not surprising that it didn't work out too well. But I've never, ever had an experience with the bell not working. Yeah, I have formulas for stuff, too. Like, let's get some of that beat down. It's a little obnoxious. And that is to do things like There we go.
Silence.
It's kind of nice sometimes. Like, for example, with the bell, one of my favorite things to do is to take it and slow it down in half. Half speed.
So this is that same bell we just heard.
So that same bell, and then here it goes half speed. With a little bit of delay, you know. Now, even better sometimes is backwards half speed.
Wow, that has a really different sound.
And then we could take another one, for example, and put it, you know, those voices over it are a little funny, too. Can you hear those? Like, real subtle, like...
Yeah, because we were talking while you were belling.
Uh-huh. While I was belling. See, we can build a little rhythm with that.
Can we get Robert in there live?
Yeah, should be on. He likes to wait till he hears the bass line in his head, and then he'll start.
Yeah, he's got to kind of make stuff up on the fly, so you got to, yeah.
This is what our first mix in the studio sounded like, by the way, 2 years ago when we were first building this. It was a bass and some weird sounds and some, you know. We've transferred that into something that you can actually dance to. See if we can get some. Here we go. Of course, again, it sounds much, much more rich when we have, a guitarist and a vocalist going along with us, and yeah, an audience jumping around and all that kind of thing. We actually brought a CD with us in case, I don't know if you guys want to.
Yeah, let's go ahead and play one of your tracks in a few minutes. But for now, yeah, keep going.
Okay.
Or let me ask a couple questions about mixing live. When you what do you do first off with your vocals? Does that also fit through? And do you take samples on the vocalist?
Yes, we take samples of vocals. We had some samples. I don't know if you noticed before and earlier in the show of you speaking. I held the mic over you, Lyle. And
I did hear that
about geeks and stuff. But it gets a little more interesting when we actually have lyrics. And you know, our singer Lindsay Chester, she's. Beautiful, got a beautiful voice, and she's.
What track do you recommend on it, for example? Three?
Track three? Right. I'll leave it to Rob. I always forget what's what, especially since they're all named based on smells. I can only really recite which is which if you hand me a stick of incense, you know? Yeah.
Well, so this is Deep Fried, track three, Some Smell.
Some Smell, Patchouli.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Deep Fried playing for us from their album, Incense. Deep Fried Incense. You're listening to Geek Speak. The geeks this morning are Miles Elamond and John Tracy. Our musical guests are members of Deep Fried, Peter Chester and Robert Cross. They're going to stop playing live for us and actually talk to us a little bit. And since this is Geek Speak, well, first off, if you're listening and want to talk to us about the show and what's going on here, you're welcome to give us a call. Phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. If you have technical problems too, you're welcome to call in and ask away. We're here standing by. If you'd like to use geekspeak.org, just click on the geeks when you go there and then click on send a message. We are talking about digital music. We're talking about Deep Fried live performers. We've been hearing most of the hour so far. You do computers, and you use computers to make music live. So what happens when your computer crashes?
So the situation is we have all of our all of our instruments, all of our microphones, everything going through the Motu, which is attached to the computer, basically going through the computer. And it comes out the main mix, and when the computer crashes,
you're off.
The whole show is crashed.
And, of course, you're using, like, the bass and I'm assuming, like, the guitar are both electric, so there's not even much acoustic sound at all.
They fully stop and, you know, mostly the rest of it's vocals. Lindsay is, you know, has the power to keep it going, but it looks pretty sore when all of a sudden the drums, the bass, guitar all stop and someone's still singing, so she doesn't really do that.
So what happened? At that point, you are frantic to get your machine booted back up and trying to get it working, right?
Actually, at that point, there is a deep sense of relaxation and satisfaction. And we stop and breathe and slowly turn on the computer. But you know what? That hasn't happened since I got a G5 and installed the latest version of Max.
So you're... Okay, Max. What about OS? What OS 10 are you using?
We've got 10.3.
Panther.
Panther. It's been kind of buggy, but it hasn't affected the way this works. In fact, I haven't really seen any difference between 10.1 and 2 and 3.
Prior to this, you were using a PowerBook, kind of the first-gen PowerBooks.
Right.
I love this. Robert, who's an engineer, is adjusting the mic for us as we speak. Thank you. So when you're, Peter, when you're mixing, when you've got the G5 computer, the operating system, a machine got more stable. But what about the Mac software itself? Does that have tendency to crash?
You mean the OS, or do you mean the Max?
The software you're running on the OS.
Oh, Max?
Yeah.
Here's the thing is, I wrote it in 9, OS 9.
Okay.
On the G4. Now, first of all, the G4 doesn't have near the processor. It's a first generation, so it is really buggy anyway. And so what happened is we'd play, and over time, I guess because it overheated or something, it would slowly kind of, I could watch the CPU going up and up and up and up. And at some
sound
point
like
in our show,
probably.
Maybe an hour into our show, all of a sudden it would just like start going.
And, like a memory leak.
Really,
there's a data structure growing there.
The worst situation was you know, it might catch a loop of some horrible sound and just start blaring that sound out, you know, just through the speakers, just really loud. And the only way to stop it was to hit the computer, well, you know, to unplug it, you know. but since then, we got the G5 and then installed OS 10, and I had to convert it to the Cuisinart, which is a software that I made, to OS 10. But Max is supported OS 10, and they've also started supporting PCs. So the next ambitious move is going to be to try this on a PC, although
using Windows?
Yeah, ultimately, I'm going to stay on a G5.
Yeah, because I don't know if going to a Windows PC is the most stable.
No, it's just because eventually I'd like to be able to have other people play with this stuff.
And Apple's actually supporting this idea of using their computers in live mixing. They just recently released a software called GarageBand, which does some of the stuff you're doing
really
live. Have you played with it yet?
No.
Well, John Tracy's played with it. So, John, what do you think of GarageBand?
If you have no musical...
Skill.
I mean,
it's really good.
The only instrument I can play is the didgeridoo.
Okay.
And you can't make a band with the didgeridoo, but you can input the didgeridoo sounds into here, and then you can pull up a drum loop, you can pull up a synthesizer bass, you can pull up, you know, they've got, I think, 40,000 different samples, and then you can mix and match them.
It's basically like a commercial simplified version of what Peter is doing.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's got the Mac ease. It doesn't have nearly the complexity that your program has. I mean, you can't do nearly the amount of things that you can do with sounds, but you can can take samples and you can loop them, you can mix them, you can fix the timing of something. So if you've got a sample that you brought in and it's at one timing, you can have it sync up with, you know, a 4/4 or 16-beat or whatever.
That's tricky.
Yeah.
We have Carl from Santa Cruz. Carl, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how you doing, Lyle?
Quite well. Thanks for calling.
I have a small business, and we have a server with six computers, that is connected with six computers.
So there's six computers in your network, okay, and
exactly.
A server?
Exactly. And it was just recently set up. We're planning on getting, installing DSL and being on the net for billing purposes, specifically for billing purposes. The question is we have a Norton antivirus. It's specific for business or commercial use. I can't tell. Okay. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know which one it is exactly.
So you have a Norton antivirus software that you want to protect these computers with for viruses.
Right.
Okay.
And that's installed on five of the computers. It was, purchased through the company that set the whole system up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's only on five of the computers. What is going to happen to that sixth computer that the software is not installed on? If we are on the net and we are, using... we do have access to the internet.
So what do you need to do to install on the other computer? Miles, you got a solution for them on this? I mean, basically, you need to buy... If you only have a 5-machine license, you need to buy another license for the software.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
That's what it comes down to, because they're going to try to protect the investment of their software, or the development of their software, by selling specific license. So if you've got a 5-license, you're definitely going to want... And I would highly recommend you do get...
Yeah, if all cost really becomes an issue where you can only afford 5 licenses of Norton or something like that, there are other options. Like, you can get download free antivirus software. I can't say as to how much better or worse they are going to be than Norton.
Right.
But, your mileage may vary. But those are a couple options you have.
Is that, if we do not utilize the internet from, say, that 6th computer that does not have the antivirus software on it, is it open to attack just because it's connected to the server?
Are you running a firewall? Are you running like a gateway kit? Or
it's got to have a router in there to do the 5
right
machines.
It has a router,
but is each computer showing up as a computer on the net, or is it going through some type of network address translation?
What's your ISP? Who's your ISP?
Oh.
Do you know? Okay, well, the general answer is yes, that machine is susceptible, just because everything that's connected potentially to the internet is susceptible.
Okay.
And it's more than that. It's the peace of mind you're going to get with more protection on it. But it is possible that if you put a firewall up, Miles is suggesting that your router probably can act as a firewall. You probably don't have public IP addresses on your internal network. So theoretically, it's relatively safe in there. But I have a tendency to just go with more safety rather than risking it.
Yeah, the idea, though, is if all the connections from your computers are going from in-out rather than out-in, there's from outside the company in, if you have it set up that way so that it isn't possible for the outside to actually make a direct connection, then you're a lot more safe.
But Carl, I also want to say that if you're like not receiving email, if you're not running Outlook, for example, on or any email client on that machine that is probably your server or something, then you're a little safer. But if your traffic is also going through that, meaning that that's kind of your router, then it's very susceptible because it probably has a public IP address. So it really has to do with some details about how your network is set up. Your ISP will probably be able to help you with this. Depending, if they're a local ISP, they'd probably definitely be able to help you. If they're kind of a giant conglomerate thing, you might not get the kind of support that you're hoping for.
Okay.
There you go, Carl. I hope that helps you.
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to GeekSpeak, and we can take a couple more calls if you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And while we're waiting for a call or two to come in, let's talk a bit more about... Oh, we have an email question.
Yeah, we got an email question from Lodima Hubbard.
Dee Hubbard, one of our geeks in New York.
Right, okay.
Lodima, yeah.
How do the deep fried guys feel about things like online music stores and file sharing?
Well, if you check out deepfried.info, you'll see that we actually post a lot of our files on there. We, because we're mixing them all through the computer, we record them every time we play. So we have full quality digital files after every single performance, although strangely I wasn't recording today. And Rob is really good at compressing them into MP3s. So
you provide your music that's even on your CD on your site?
Yeah, well, CD stuff's a little truncated.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, we're just giving a brief piece of the recorded sounds, just because we spent so much time and energy on them. But I think the question might be talking a little bit more about, like, free full songs,
right,
and the option of, like, iTunes where you're paying a dollar.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's say I get your CD and pay for it, or through nefarious means get your CD, and then I go ahead and encode MP3s and put it up on Sharing's Place. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you guys are trying to, and this is your profession, you're making money off this. I mean, how do you
really
feel about
any
it?
Money off of
it. Okay, you're trying
to be. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, it is really just, you are stealing when it comes down to the basic facts. But I mean, everyone likes free stuff. So you can't turn that away. But actually, we've been looking into this recently, and when it comes to huge corporations charging a dollar, that's out of control, because the artist is getting 0.001 cent off everything, and it just doesn't make any sense. But for a small artist, we're caught in this in between place, because in order for us to sell songs online, I think if people are paying 25 cents per track, that's reasonable. A dollar is unreasonable.
Or how about if the artist was making more?
Yeah, exactly. Nice. The artist was making a larger percent, which we could do as our own artists. But the thing is, to get things hooked up on our website so people can charge us, then all these fees are coming in that have to be paid for us to get the card number and all this stuff.
So. Well, maybe all you guys need is just some free advertising on a radio station or something.
Right, and then also I wanted to say, I mean, we don't have, like, one solid, you know, this is how we as a group feel. We haven't really discussed everything as a group. I mean, personally, if I found out that our music was being, you know, given out through different, you know, sharing
online places,
free places. I'm sure there's a better word for it. I wouldn't mind so much at this point in our career, as long as our name was still
stay
on the files,
right?
Because that's just getting our name out there. And actually, the only reason we made a CD is to get it out there. We didn't make it to make money, you know.
Right.
I mean, so we need to sell it so we can pay for it.
Are you self-publishing the CD?
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, you're probably mixing it in the studios that you work at, Robert. Mm-hmm. Real quick. Your website, again, is deepfried.info. Your show tomorrow, CD release celebration, tomorrow, February 28th at 8 p.m. at Pacific Cultural Center, 1307 Seabright Avenue, corner of Broadway and Seabright. Uh-huh. And you'll be performing live on the fly, and I'm sure you'll also have your CDs available at that
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'd like to just briefly give out a thanks to the Santa Cruz Digital Arts Festival. That's where we pretty much started playing 2 years ago.
And that's where we had you on a year ago.
We came in a year, I came in a year ago and did some Deep Fried Geek Speak.
So you're part of the digital festival, which is starting in April, right?
It's starting in April, and officially the Deep, I don't know, you know, whatever, but the Digital Arts Festival has been very, very supportive in the CD release show. They're all the organizers are going to be there, except for Alice, who's in India. And I just wanted to give the Digital Arts Festival thanks, and I want to say to Santa Cruz that if you're interested in doing digital arts or seeing digital arts or helping with digital arts, go to santacruzdigitalarts.org and volunteer or submit your artwork. The submission deadline is the start of March, and so
thank you
very
much. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers, and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Peter Chester and Robert Cross, thank you for being a part of GeekSpeak this morning. To learn more about Deep Fried, go to deepfried.info. Deepfried.info. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. And our geeks this morning were Miles Elam and John Tracy. Thank you all for participating in Geek Speak. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, on the web at kosp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.
So we're at this medieval castle, you know, near the highway, not far from the airport.
Good evening, my lords and lady. My name is Jim, and I'll be your serf tonight.
Are you a wench?
Yes, I am a wench.
Are you a drinks wench or a...
I'm a photo wench.
Fake medieval castles, wax museums, Civil War reenactments, in short, attempts to simulate worlds we have never been to, this week on This American Life.
Sunday evening at 7 on KUSP.